You are now listening to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast with Dr. Taylor Crick. Dr. Taylor is an expert in helping those suffering with autoimmune disease, and he himself has autoimmune disease. Autoimmunity is rampant today, and the purpose of this podcast is to educate about the underlying causes and natural solutions to halt autoimmune disease progression. This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. For more information from Dr. Taylor, visit www.autoimmunedocpodcast.com. Without further ado, here is your host, Dr. Taylor Crick.
All right, welcome to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Taylor Crick, and I'm here with another interview and discussion. So I'm here with Dr. Ashley Contreras, who's a doctor of physical therapy and a vestibular rehab expert. So Dr. Ashley, say hi to the listeners real quick.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Crick, for having me. My passion is seeing people who are dizzy have dizziness. And this has grown over the past 15 years of my physical therapy career. So I'm a physical therapist by trade, and then got into this specialist kind of over those years. And it's something that's on the rise. So really interested to get your point of view and see how many dizzy patients you're having, and seeing where this sensory system, the vestibular system, we can give more education and awareness behind it.
Yeah, sweet. So I just a little background, you know, first off, for me as a chiropractor and really chiropractic being a study, a lot of neurology, you know, I saw a lot of vestibular cases, a lot of dizziness cases, even back with my old clinic when I was doing actually hands-on adjusting and things, but I still didn't understand the vestibular system, even from a functional neurology standpoint, as much as I do now. Now, Dr. Ashley and I connected over Instagram because she's putting out great content about vestibular disorders and dizziness disorders. And I just see that in my current practice in virtually like almost everybody that I see. So currently, you know, obviously if you're listening to the podcast, you probably know, but I see a lot of chronic and complex conditions, a lot of things associated with mold toxicity, long COVID is one of my specialties. So in both of those, you know, subpopulations, there's a lot of dizziness, a lot of vertigo, a lot of fatigue, a lot of nervous system imbalances. And so retraining and rewiring the nervous system is really your focus and your goal. And in fact, what are your three things that you say is your tagline? Rewire, retrain. I forget what they are. I'm looking on your website.
Rewire, rebalance, and recover.
Yeah. Yep. So tell me about just again what you were just saying, but how you got into this, Dr. Ashley, and what's led you to this kind of specialty throughout the years, like you were just saying, throughout your years in practice.
Yeah, so the vestibular system has really just caught my attention. I was really intrigued by the patients coming in. They varied from, you know, people that have chronic illness and a whole slew of things to some relatively healthy people whose lives have been drastically changed with this vestibular symptom. So I'm like, all right, what's the, you know, mechanism behind this and where did all of this start to go wrong? And so the more that you learn, the more complex it becomes.
Exactly.
So interesting to me. It's so intriguing. I love the way that the brain works.
I love what you just said because you said my magic word, the mechanism. What is the mechanism behind this? And it is like the more you learn, the more you want to learn. And yeah, it's a black hole.
Yeah,
it's
yeah. Never ending. So, like I said, I'm a physical therapist for 15 years. My first job, I worked at acute rehab. So a lot of people were coming in from the hospital setting for this initial really intensive recovery. And at that point, I was a new grad, just getting exposed to all these different diagnoses, spinal cord injury, brain injury, all of these amazing things. And we had a specialist, a vestibular specialist there. So whenever we had a dizzy patient, we could call them in. This worked out wonderful because we got exposure. We got to see how they were going to work with our patients specifically, but we didn't have to know everything. And so that little seed was planted in that early years of my neuro exposure. And then I became a travel physical therapist. So I went everywhere from like Florida to California. I worked in all different settings. And there I got more exposure to, okay, you're going to see some ortho, you're going to see some skilled nursing facilities. So I got to see the rehab like continuum in different points, there's always dizziness, right? So I was working eventually in the neuro ICU down in University of California. And I had gotten married, so we settled down there for a while. And then I got to see these acute dizziness. They're just getting out of the bed for the first time after some big trauma, some big stroke, hemorrhage, anything like that. And we could see those initial dizziness. Some were waking up with BPPV because they were positionally in a certain place for surgery. You know, some of these surgeries are side-lying or on their back. They're in the ICU for a while. And then eventually moved up to Santa Clara, California, and worked at Kaiser Permanente. This is where I really honed in my vestibular, like, knowledge, because I was a neurotherapist there, hired on. It was a team of about 50 therapists, and we had two people that were seeing vestibular and neuro. So out of all the things that you could be seeing, we were getting all of these referrals. And this system, it's an HMO. So the doctors actually work for the hospital system. Everything's in this network. It was actually lovely. Like, you can see all the notes. You can email the doctors. So we were really integrated in this way. But I was getting more complex dizziness. Mm-hmm. Things that I didn't know before. I was getting MDDS, which is mal de debarkment. So people would go on a cruise, they come back dizzy, and they would end up to see us. So I'm like, okay, what are the treatments? How are they different than BPPV? There's a whole nother complex world of dizziness. And I think those are the patients that you're ultimately seeing now, is the central nervous system dizziness.
Yeah. So tell us about some of those just different, I don't know if the diagnoses, you know, matter as much. I'm particularly intrigued by that. But just for the listeners, besides just dizziness, what are some of the symptoms? Because I think that, you know, I've seen this on your website, and what I would say is that if you listen for it in clinical practice, you know, a lot of my thing is not physical exam, it's listening. And I've heard it said, if you listen to the patient long enough, they'll tell you their diagnosis. But people
definitely read that on one of my posts.
Yeah. Did you say that too? Yeah. So
absolutely.
People will say this. I heard it from somebody else. That's funny. But people will say this in a thousand different ways. They'll say, I feel like I'm floating. I feel like I'm here, but I'm not here. You know, in some cases, there's kind of the depersonalization, which might get a little more into the psych, you know, realm of things. But tell me about, what are the symptoms besides just like the room is spinning? What are the other symptoms that are really common that people experience?
True vertigo is that room spinning sensation. It usually will last for 30 seconds or very short lived. In some cases, that true room spinning vertigo can last up to a day. And that's really, truly miserable. Anyone who's had that vertigo or that sensation, it is miserable. But on a much smaller scale, or a lighter scale, I shouldn't say smaller because these are all terrible symptoms to deal with. We can have brain fog, imbalance. We can have poor coordination. So you're not hitting, you're not grabbing your water bottle, like knock things over, you're clumsy.
Bumping into walls or things.
Facial awareness is off. And so you can have difficulty concentrating, lightheadedness, motion sensitivity, headaches can be created from this dysfunction, and a lot of fatigue, brain fog. That's a lot that we've been seeing for post-COVID, these long COVID cases. They're like, okay, I've definitely gotten better. I'm back to work, but I'm really drained. I don't feel like I'm processing things in the right way. And like you said, there can be a dispersonalization, like they don't recognize, and like those automatic things that just happen in our sensory systems don't make sense. They don't match up.
Talk about that real quick, if you will. Like, cause you were talking about this right before we recorded about the matching up, or you used the word, there's like slippage or slipping of how your visual input matches up with your neurological, you know, making sense of that visual input. But talk about that slippage, and maybe even how you were mentioning how the vestibular system ages, because even as somebody just naturally ages, this is something that could use tuned up or could use trained, kind of like, you know, your fast twitch muscles or your memory or any other, you know, skill or function. But talk about that slippage, or what exactly is going on with the disconnect between the visual input and the sensory, you know, sensation.
Yeah. So let me tell you first, the vestibular system is a sensory system. So just like we have our tactile system and we can get that sense of feeling, we have our visual system. We can see what's happening. You know, we have our visual acuity. How good are your eyes? But also we have this vestibular system. And so this is two organs and three canals. They do different things. They sense different things. And they will give us this sensory information. So the organ is the one that can have those receptors. It's sensitive to movement, to gravity. So as we move through space, as we turn our head, it's telling our brain now how to react to that information, that sensory information. And then our visual system is linked to that through something called the vestibular ocular reflex. So that's an automatic reflex that happens. We move our head to one side. I can keep my eyes on you, on my target, and that's not going to blur. But if that system isn't working 100% or like it has to be fine-tuned, then when I move my head, things become blurry. They start to blur, or it can be oscillopsia, which is jumping vision. Mm. So those are more symptoms that could be the vestibular ocular reflex not working for us. And that does age over time. All of our sensory systems, I think we've all known somebody older who's had balance loss. We can have that sensory cyst peripheral neuropathy. That's our aging of our, you know, sensory peripheral awareness. That vestibular system can also age over time. So we all need to exercise it or keep it going, keep it active. Information is helpful to our brain. So we need sensory stimuli. If we're in a dark room, if we're in a bed, we start to age very quickly. Mm. So moving through space gives us that vestibular information. And I can't tell you, like, I'm in the mom phase now. Everybody that I talk to, we've got young kids. They'll go and they go on these crazy like rotary rides. And we're like, oh, we can't even watch them anymore. Right.
Yeah,
we've already aged out of like a healthy vestibular system. Processing that information is harder for us. And so I go on a swing just to get some of that like forward back. And I do a lot of exercise up, you know, squats, things that I'm moving, and then I'll add a head rotation in so that I'm exercising and hopefully preventing that from really aging too quickly.
Yeah, well, that's great. You know, a lot of my hobbies involve a lot of sensory awareness, you know, skateboarding and skiing and things like that. But I also think of it even for my kids and for, you know, clients and things like that. I think of it as just, you're preventing a hip fracture when you're 90, you know, it's just coordination. And they say, if you don't use it, you lose it. And so I think that all those just coordination skills need to be challenged to some degree. You don't, not everybody needs to be on a skateboard and things like that, but a swing or a bicycle, or, you know, people that play racket sports tend to have longer lifespans, and there's different associations like that. So I think that's really, really important to add. So let me ask you this. From a mechanism standpoint, and like from a root cause standpoint too, you know, so on one hand, we age, this ages, so it gets worse over time. So yeah, if you're 60, 70, that might be, you might not have the same integrity of your vestibular system that you used to have. What are some of the acute causes that can cause it, you know, quite suddenly? Because I think, like you mentioned earlier, a lot of people are otherwise really, really healthy. Mm-hmm. And this hits them out of nowhere. You know, they're a healthy, you know, 28-year-old and they're driving down the freeway or something, or they get an infection maybe. What are some of the things that can drive that or cause that from a you know, viral standpoint, if that's the mechanism, or from just a, you know, mechanistic standpoint, BPVV or other diagnostic standpoint? Tell me about some of those other more acute causes.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Great question for us to go over. So there is a very high likelihood that these individuals had a viral load, and it can turn into something called vestibular neuritis or vestibular labyrinthitis. Basically, what that means, neuritis is only affecting our vestibular nerve. So it's only affecting your balance and the function of the vestibular system. Labyrinthitis means that it affected the hearing, so that cochlear portion of the nerve, as well as the vestibular portion.
Okay.
So my, the outcome that they'd have is, yes, one side, because we have a right and left vestibular system, one side took a hit. And so that's called unilateral vestibular hypofunction. It's ultimately a symptom given a diagnosis, like given a name.
Yeah.
Diagnosis.
And like so many.
So many things are really, it's a symptom, and then you get the name associated with it. But I'm always like, okay, well, what's underlying that? Or what pre-existed before that created this problem?
Ooh, yeah.
And so with these diagnoses or, you know, these individuals, all of a sudden their world is spinning or their world is off balance. They wake up and they have this problem. So for some individuals, it happens once, and then that viral load can damage the one side. That side doesn't come back. So it will now function at 75%.
Can it be retrained? Can that one side be retrained and that inflammation be quenched?
What we see is that centrally we compensate for it.
Okay.
So your brain, a healthy brain, is able to now say, okay, I've got 75% info on this right side. I've got 100% info on the left side. And it recalibrates that to now be normal. So the more that they're moving, the more that they're exposed to that vestibular information, a healthy brain can figure it out. Unfortunately, now we have a lot of unhealthy brains for so many reasons, whether they're in a moldy environment, whether they have migraine as a pre-existing diagnosis, these things can make it where they can't calibrate. They cannot centrally figure this out. So that hypofunction, whatever happened to now there's a loss on one side, it is now chronic. Like they can't get past this. They're not getting better. So this is where vestibular rehab fails unless you're really implementing these brain healthy habits and becoming, you know, more versed in how do we get that central nervous system back on track in order to compensate for that loss. And we've seen long COVID. Long COVID came out, people were losing their smell. We weren't quite sure what COVID was initially. But I saw a lot of things that mimicked my concussion patients and mimicked my vestibular patients. And I'm like, wait. I'm like, this is now causing damage to the same area that I see these vestibular symptoms. So early on, I was like, oh, this is really going to be interesting. I started reading as much as I could as it was coming out because I could predict a lot from my knowledge of the vestibular system and how that information is processed and the similarities of the post-concussive population.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting linking all three of those because in my head, I'm thinking like, okay, if I donk you on the head with a hammer, your brain's going to be inflamed in certain areas. And then with the olfactory loss and some of those things with COVID, it's a neurological lesion of a different cranial nerve. And then the vestibular is just a different neuritis, like you said, or lesion of blocking that nerve function or causing inflammation of that nerve. But they're all three just different. Like I always say, if the house is on fire, it might be the bedroom, it might be the bathroom, but no matter what, so there's certain rooms that might be on fire, but no matter what, the brain is the whole house, and that's kind of the concussion. How do you separate concussion patients or symptoms, Dr. Ashley, from vestibular? Because the vestibular could possibly be a part of the post-concussion, but also I'd say with post-concussion, you're dealing with other symptoms and other things. So what are you seeing in those two populations? And is dizziness the big separator, or how do you train their brains differently? Or what are some of the differentiators, I guess?
Yeah. So in my practice, these are very similar things that I treat. The treatment's very similar because the symptoms are similar. So we're looking at what's not functioning. The difference is the way that they occur. So concussion happens. It's a blow to the head or body that impacts the brain. And so there's a trauma. There's either a fall, a motor vehicle accident, sports concussion. It could be domestic violence or blast injuries. We see like people coming home from overseas with these symptoms. And this creates also whiplash. So with those concussion patients, I cannot ignore the neck. And as a chiropractor, you know how important that is to the brain's function. So if the neck is not properly aligned and working, we can have those nerves irritated all the way up. So that has to be something that we're also implementing. And then really, what's their presentation as a whole? What are their symptoms? With concussion, we can also have exercise intolerance, which can be also a form of dysautonomia. And that's something that we are also going to discuss today, dysautonomia, and how that similar brain lesion, right? It all comes down to what area of the brain is not processing information correctly. Where are we getting these error signals? And then how do we create that healthier processing?
Yeah. So talk about dysautonomia, because I had asked you in some of our, you know, questions that in advance, just talk about POTS and dysautonomia, but what's the association there? Because I think of the way that I describe it to people, and I often use a lot of visuals, so I'll show them a picture and I'll say, hey, if it's your pituitary that's inflamed, you might have hormonal issues. If it's your basal ganglia that's inflamed, you might have, anxiety issues or movement issues or different things. But it's all just neuroinflammation. But what about the dysautonomia and some of the autonomic regions, you know, hypothalamus, amygdala, and limbic system? What talk about dysautonomia, your take on the associations?
Yeah, those areas, they get wired together. So one thing that you'll hear a lot is that anxiety and dizziness, they are very highly linked. Is it because the same area of the brain is hypersensitive? Most likely, right? So they link into each other. And then if you've ever been dizzy, if you've ever felt that sense of false motion, it is anxiety provoking. So it's going to wire and then link that system to be more sensitive. And the more that we wire or fire wire these nerves together, and they become more and more linked, more and more wired, more and more fired, the symptom is higher. Yeah. So those things definitely happen together. First, let's define dysautonomia, which is a large umbrella term for the dysfunction of the autonomic nervous system. That area of the brain helps to regulate blood pressure, heart rate, sweating, eye movements, sleep, and breathing. So these are automatic things that we use to survive, right? They're things that we don't technically need to think about. They're going to happen in a healthy state. They're very primal. So these are things that are just happening under the scenes. And then now we use a lot of techniques to kind of help activate that system. We use a lot of breathing techniques. We use a lot of things to help us sleep better. Like, how do we treat those symptoms? And then POTS is a very specific subcategory of dysautonomia, where the symptom is that your heart rate increases over 40 beats with the positional change going from lying down to standing. So it has to be that number, like it's a magic number of 40. Yeah. But obviously, if people are 30 beats and that's not a healthy response, that response is not happening fast enough, and you're getting that increase of a heart rate when you're changing position, you still fall into that category for me.
Yeah.
There's a form of dysautonomia.
You're here on the spectrum somewhere. You might not be at the end, which is true POTS, or you might, you know, I see a lot of people that they might not even in their local area have access to a tilt table test or things like that. So they might not have the true diagnosis. And then I see other people that are like nurses and they're like, I don't really think I have POTS. I think they just gave me that diagnosis because I failed the tilt table test. So there's different, you could be at different points on the spectrum, I would say, but I completely agree with you.
A lot of diagnoses are like this, right? Like
exactly.
Criteria that you have to fall into. So vestibular migraine is on the rise. It's something that it's a migraine, but it hits the vestibular system. And then your symptom is dizziness. So yes, you have dizziness. But it's coming neurologically. And then that nervous system is causing the dizzy episode, and it mimics, it can mimic BPPV. So if you go in for a positional test at that time that you're having this vestibular migraine, you can very easily be diagnosed with five things. And it really comes down to the root of a migraine.
And my thing too is, who cares what the name is? You need to train your deficits and work, you know, reduce your toxicities and increase your deficiencies and just work on the person that you're looking at. So who cares sometimes the name? Obviously, the name can help guide us towards treatment and things like that. But in all those cases, you still need to retrain your nervous system.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I have personally like a very mild form of POTS. But it took me years, and I study this, but I was like, oh, you know, like I remember going to, an amusement park when I was a teenager. I was standing in line. It was really hot out. I got so overwhelmed by the heat and the people around, and you're doing rides. So I'm stimulating that nervous system and the vestibular system. And I've always been pretty motion sensitive, and I felt like I was going to pass out. Like everything was kind of going black. I went under a shaded tree, I hydrated. And then now I avoid certain things that I know are going to provoke me. I don't need medication. So just lifestyle changes have been something that I can implement and prevent this. But one doctor will tell me that I have POTS or have symptoms of POTS. It's probably not in my medical chart. I don't know that anybody's like formally diagnosed it as a medical thing. But then if you move somewhere, you lose all that information anyways of your diagnoses and things. So it's more how are we doing as humans?
Yeah.
How are we functioning in our lifestyle? And now, obviously, people are struggling. So we have a lot more awareness into our food, our diet, our hydration, our risk factors, environmental factors, stress level. You know, everybody's like, oh, we have to get back in nature because we've lost some of these fundamental things.
Yeah. So talk about some of those things too, Dr. Ashley. I don't want to jump around too much. If we were finished with the last question, I forget even what it was. Everything you're saying is great. I agree with everything that you say. Tell me about some of those other things like gut health, or, you know, you mentioned mold, and, you know, those are the key words to win me over, like mechanisms and mold and things like that. But what are some of the big root causes other than, like, I don't know, I don't want to say stress or just like the generic, like sedentary lifestyle, but some of the ones like COVID, mold, heavy metals, you know, especially neurotoxins. What's your take on neurotoxins, you know, with heavy metals and mold being especially damaging sometimes to the vestibular system and to the limbic deep regions of the brain, and just airborne toxins? You know, I always tell people with airborne toxins, these are deep midline areas of the brain oftentimes, which is right on the other side of your breathing canals. But what do you think about some of those underlying root causes, stress, diet, autoimmunity? You know, I'm just curious. That's a big picture question, I guess. But like, I see a lot of Hashimoto's, and there could be cerebellar cross reactivity. And what are your take on some of those lifestyle factors? What are the most important ones, I guess?
Yeah, well, that's awesome. You know, great link to the cerebellum, because cerebellum processes our vestibular information. And it is such a highly complex area of the brain. But it is that sensory receptor. So then we can use that for our vestibular spinal reflex, which is changing our balance. and reacting in that way. So the root cause can be neuroinflammation. It could be a viral hypofunction. It could be the vestibular migraine. It can be that head trauma. It could be lack of oxygen to certain areas of the brain. But all of these things are root causes.
Exactly. And sorry to cut you off, but I think what we're both saying is that it's multifactorial and addresses many of them as you can, but it's not one needle in the haystack oftentimes, but all those things matter. But keep going. You're on a roll. Sorry. Yeah.
I've seen a rise in these things as well as autoimmune conditions. Because I'm a PT, I am very lucky that I get usually an hour for this evaluation with my patients and then an hour for follow-ups. Sometimes they only need 30 minutes, but a lot of times I'm rebooking them for an hour session. So I get to hear their story. I get to ask more questions and really look into, do they have a history of autoimmune disease? Is there another name, another diagnosis that is telling me what the root cause of this vestibular symptom is? Just had a gentleman, he came in, he's like, I don't know why I'm dizzy. He's seen quite a few doctors. He is a wonderful compensator. So he is like somebody, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm going to keep doing things in a way that I can keep moving and be independent. But he's really starting to struggle as he's getting older. And so I kept asking him, like, okay, you know, what do you think could be root causes? It was something that had happened progressively over many years. So it wasn't one of those like viral attacks to one side of that vestibular system. And I noticed that his skin was discolored. I asked him about it. And he said, oh, I have a condition. Okay, like he didn't even know the name of it. So, of course, I'm Googling it really fast. Vitiligo, is that how you say it?
Oh, yeah. And yeah, there's cerebellar connections to that.
Condition, it attacks your pigment, your skin cells. Anything that's causing inflammation at that level, that it's attacking our skin pigment or attacking our distal nerves, and we have peripheral neuropathy. He had severe peripheral neuropathy. And they call it idiopathic. They don't know the root cause. Well, I'm linking all of this to this one disorder, you know, his root cause, like his autoimmune, his immune system is attacking healthy things that are then creating symptoms in that.
And I don't know if you're familiar with this, but vitiligo is associated with Hashimoto's, and TPO antibodies can attack skin, and they can also attack the cerebellum. That's they say if Dr. Hashimoto had discovered it in the cerebellum, it'd be called Hashimoto's cerebellar disease. He just found it in the thyroid first. It's about equally as prevalent in the cerebellum. So there's direct association between those two things, or could potentially be, you know, if the labs and other things match up, but. Ding, ding, ding. I completely agree. And I love that detective work and that mindset of like, hey, everything's connected.
It's all connected. Yep. And so if you have autoimmune markers, you should be asking yourself, okay, what can I do to get these markers down before that damage really happens? And our population, our generation is better about that. my parents' generation is like, well, we're just going to be given what we give.
Exactly.
We're not going to exercise. We don't care until it's like the damage is already done. But we're like, oh, we want to get ahead of this. If you're going to tell me that I'm now going to have balance issues or I'm going to have this neuropathy, but I can change something in my diet, my exercise level, my lifestyle factors now, we want to age healthier, right?
Okay. So, talk about Dr. Ashley, if you will, because, you know, really the way that, again, I uncovered you or discovered you, whatever, is you make these kits. So talk about rehabilitation. Talk about, you know, the rehab. Talk about the exercises. Talk about your kits. You know, I'll tell you, and I'll say it on the air, and I told you this right when we first started communicating and ordering some kits. I said, you don't charge enough for them. I think they're highly valuable is my point. You know, they're a great value. So just even for people out there, but talk about rehabilitation, talk about home rehab. I'll tell you, you know, just even from a functional neurology standpoint, I'm not certified in any functional neurology, but I've taken many, many courses on it and learned it. And the number one theme in my, from my understanding, is train the deficits and don't overdo it. If you push somebody past their threshold, you will cause them to flare. So you want to kind of push somebody's limits just right to the edge and then let them recover and relax and then train them again. But as their tolerance or their threshold for doing a certain amount of reps or doing certain exercises increases, you want to keep increasing their amount of reps, but you don't want to overdo it. And I mentioned, I think it was before we started recording, but I mentioned how I see a lot of people with known vestibular issues who have maybe been, like, maybe half the people have even been told they have vestibular issues. So not everybody, it's not that well recognized, but then they've gone to maybe vestibular rehab and they've told them things like shake your head back and forth 1,000 times a day. And it really crashes them. So talk about training, talk about your kits, talk about some maybe rights or wrongs or just some big picture thoughts with that. But your kits are really, really valuable. So talk about rehab, if you will.
Thank you. Yeah, I am all about access. So because I've moved all over the place, I leave patients. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to work in your state anymore. You're going to have to work with this next therapist. And that all almost like broke my heart each time. Like, oh, there's certain people who you just really like get along with and you want to help their rehab along. And so when I moved back to Connecticut to be closer to family, our health system here is a little bit behind California. They're a little more progressive. Everything's more integrated. And so I said,
that's so funny because, but I left Illinois and I had my first practices in Salt Lake and now I moved back to Illinois and I would say it's pretty similar to that.
Yeah. So you want to increase that access and you want to make it a little bit easier for folks, to find you and to get tools in order to help. I've also had patients who get to the clinic and by the time that they've been driven in because they're not safe to drive, that process, that motion sensitivity, they can't do a good rehab session.
That's a good call.
So yeah. Telehealth kind of embraced that. How can we do this from home? And the research has come out that it is still effective if you're doing home, these virtual vestibular consults compared to in-person and sometimes better for certain people who can't tolerate that. So I created cards. They're like cardstock and they're very intuitive. They come with video access. So it tells you what to do with each of these cards in order to get the visual systems and that vestibular system processing better. What I love about it is that it's meant for you to have that autonomy. So patients are now in charge of what they're doing. I don't think anyone is really good at knowing exactly how you feel. Like I feel different on certain days. Some days I'm sensitive to lights a little bit more than others. Some days, like hormonal cycles, they can change the way that my resilience is. And so on certain days, I will not provoke the same amount of symptoms. Mm. So vestibular rehab has to be in that same capacity that it's unique to each person, that they are in charge of how fast they're going, of how many times they're doing it, but exposing themselves in that correct, you know, Goldilocks rule. You want to be able to push the symptoms to a little bit of discomfort. You don't want to overload and you don't want to overwhelm the system because then you're going to get that kickback that the nervous system is like fighting.
Yeah. It's kind of like running. Maybe if you are a runner, but if you're particularly tired or not feeling that great one day, you don't have to go out for a 5-mile run, just do 2 miles, but you're still a runner and you're still challenging that cardiovascular system and things, but you've got a little bit of, like you said, autonomy to know when to push it and know when to hold back.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started making some of these cards and I was bringing them into work and my patients wanted them. So they started asking for the tools to be able to use at home. And I'd guide them like, oh, go to the craft store, you know, pick up like some cardstock, like make what I'm making. And they're like, no, we want to buy this.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Like, I think it would be very helpful for you to have this at home. So then I came home and, you know, pitched the business idea to my husband, who's an entrepreneur at heart. And he was like, yeah, I love it. Let's do it. So prototypes, started making some of these kits, putting together, you know, different pieces and building a business based around vestibular rehab and these tools that you can have at home. So there's a toolkit for patients, very patient friendly, comes with the pieces. It comes with a 100-page journal so that they can also track what else is going on with their symptoms and see, oh, okay, over a period of time, I am getting better. Or, you know, what things do they need to still work on and modify? If they're not sleeping at night, they're going to have a harder time with doing these vestibular exercises, right? So how does that all link together for this individual? And then there's clinician kits. So there's kits that you as a chiropractor or physical therapist can have in the clinic. So you're starting them in the clinic on their rehab and then carrying over to their home exercise program rather than doing like a handout of sheets. They're actually getting tools that they are going home with, working on those different reflexes and things that function.
Because I think that that's probably the best of both worlds. You know, I see a lot of people that they're looking for DIY, not because it's better, but just because of burnout and like they go to 10 different specialists and they've been to practitioners and had imaging and et cetera. So, but having some hands-on direction, I think is good. But after, you know, whatever it is, 10, 12 sessions, can I be taught how to do this on my own at home? But I think for people that don't have that access to the practitioners or the right practitioners, they can just start right away with the kits. But to the people that can start with a practitioner and then say, okay, now here you go, do it at home, and then still have some follow-ups, I think, in an ideal world. But yeah, that's awesome. What's the difference between you offer the two kits, right? The vestibular and the concussion?
Yes. The vestibular and concussion are very similar as far as the vestibular component of it, just like the rehab is very similar. The concussion kit also focuses more on neck strengthening, postural training, because of that neck component with concussion. And so they're slightly different in the exercises that are provided.
Okay. Where can people find you? Tell us about your website. Tell us about your social media accounts. Where can people find you?
Yeah, the website is vistim.com.
V-I-Z-Stim.
S-T-I-M. Yep. Really, it's meant for visual vestibular stimuli. So coming back to, you know, how do those two things work together? When we only work on the vestibular system and we ignore the visual system, it typically doesn't go well. So these things have to work together. And I found that centrally, a lot of the patients that are not just that peripheral system, but the central, they have difficult time moving their eyes, getting on targets, staying on targets. So we had to get that foundational component before moving forward. And then our Instagram is Vistim Recovery. Come follow for content, things like that. And I work with patients in a variety of ways.
Yeah, you do some virtual consults and appointments too. So tell us about that.
That is correct. Yep. So in Connecticut, you can see me as a practitioner in person or mobile kind of. You know, I have a few different options for seeing me personally. And then outside of Connecticut, I do vestibular coaching. So as a physical therapist, you can only work in the states that you are licensed. That's the way that it works. But health coaches can work anywhere and really improve the quality of your life. I do feel like everybody needs a coach in a few aspects of life, right? So we're used to embracing dietary coaches, like nutritional coaches. If you have vestibular symptoms, getting a vestibular coach to help change those lifestyle factors and get you feeling your best.
Nice. Well, yeah, that's exactly the same as my practice of, you know, most of the people that come to me, they're not looking for another doctor or another treatment. They're seeing all these specialists. They've got all these diagnoses, but they're looking for how do I put all these pieces of the puzzle together? And that's kind of what a coach does. So that's kind of the exact same role that I play, but you need multiple coaches. So I think that's super cool. So hopefully people will, you know, check out your stuff. I think you guys have just done a great job again with the kits and with the branding and the website and everything. So you and your husband, because that's same with me and my wife too. You know, she does all my virtual graphic design and all my website and my Instagram and stuff like that. So that's good. How old are your kids? Random side question.
They are 8, 7, and 5.
Okay. So mine are 9-year-old twins and 5. Oh. So basically the exact same.
Very similar. You need somebody there home with the kids, right? So this has given me that flexibility to have a modified schedule and work in the capacity that I want to work to keep doing what I love. But it also gave me something, a really good motivational drive through COVID, because my 3 kids were all in paid daycare at that time. So we pulled them out. They were going to be in 3 different classrooms, and I was going to an outpatient hospital setting for work. So when the world shut down, we were all home. And I already had this ball rolling, like this idea. And so I was able to initiate in 2020 the business idea and then work on it through COVID. And it really helped me mentally to have something that I was like, you know, actually putting my tools into use and providing that virtual ability, but also just manipulating, like creating the cards and creating the tools gave me this like mental stimuli, which we all needed at that point.
Yeah. Give you some purpose and
some distraction from the kids and things to do. So it was really helpful for me to start the business and have something to do other than just, you know, childcare at that time.
And just with the virtualization of everything through that time of now, it's so common. You know, I had a patient the other day from Dubai, and she was like, hey, the best thing about COVID was now I can meet with people like you and find the best people and meet with them virtually, whereas that wasn't as common before.
That's right. Yeah.
Let me ask you my last 2 questions, and they're you know, kind of 2 sides of the same coin, but what are some of the most common like mistakes that you've seen people make when they have a vestibular issue or they're trying to rehab or change their brains, obvious or maybe not so obvious? That's one question. And what are some of the most common successes that you've seen that tie people together? What are some of the most common things that people are falling into pitfall wise, or what are some of the most common things that people are using as, you know, a ladder to kind of get out of their hole, right and wrong things?
A great way to wrap it up. So absolutely the most common problems or mistakes that we see are that they get referred, they come to rehab too early. If the central nervous system is completely offline and it is not working, you need to suppress that first. There okay. needs to be some level of getting their nervous system calmed down so that they can tolerate this rehab. Because too early, too soon, all we're going to do is provoke a really heightened awareness of this, and they're not going to be successful. So there's been many people out there who did rehab at the wrong time, and then they say, well, that didn't work for me, so I'm not going to do that again. But if you are now back online, you're feeling better, and then you can do it in the right way, it might be time to re-look into that.
So maybe like calm the immediate neuroinflammation first, if you like big picture, and then maybe your capacity for the training is going to be better and your response is going to be better.
Absolutely. Okay. Yep. So you have to be able to respond to it instead of just hitting a wall each time. So if simple movement, if going out for a walk every single time triggers you that you're bed bound, you're not ready.
Agreed.
Because movement that we do, other than calming the nervous system or giving you tools and that education, is going to trigger you.
It's going to cross that threshold. Okay.
It will. Yep. So you want to make sure that you're getting that taken care of, you know, see how you can calm that down with a provider like yourself, or with medication sometimes. So don't be shy, you know, don't have that negativity towards medication if that's something that you need at this phase. With autoimmunity, we also go through like heightened phases and things.
Layers. Layers and remissions. Right? Yeah.
Yep. So during that remission might be the time to work on it. It might not be the time when you're in a flare, because you can't do as much. And so we're rehab providers, we're movement specialists. You want to see us at the right time.
Yeah. And it's probably because it's rehab. It's not a fast, you know, miracle overnight approach. It's like training and the practicing and developing skills and neurologic connections and things like that. It just doesn't happen that rapidly.
Correct.
So it's more of a root cause approach more than just acute symptom management.
Very commonly, people stop moving. When you are dizzy when you move and it feels terrible, you're going to stop moving. And so that's a bad way to get yourself feeling worse, because we move, we're moving creatures. We have to be able to get up. We have to be able to move through space. And so getting yourself on a regimen, getting out of bed, getting moving, that is something that's truly important. Just walking alone, these patients went through a study, and when they had hypofunction, just walking, just getting out and walking, those individuals did better. Because they had a regimen, they had a plan. And so we can compensate pretty well just from exposure. So don't stop moving. And ignoring the little things. So if the central nervous system is not in that healthy brain state, you're not going to do as well. So thinking of the little things like being able to suppress some sensory information, our prefrontal cortex is what suppresses information. Imagine if you felt everything all day, heard everything all day, and felt movement all day. We would be so miserable.
Pretty miserable, yeah.
If that prefrontal cortex is not suppressing information, that also has to be something that you work on. And so that can be leading us to these successes. So how do people come out of this really terrible phase of their life? And if they're in this chronic, you know, symptoms, how do they get out of that? Vagus nerve stim is something that I absolutely love now. It's something that helps with that sensory distraction. It's a distracting technique. It's stimulating our vagus nerve, which is something that is very important in our ability to use our autonomic nervous system for digestion, for that mental health. So many things, so many benefits from doing vagus nerve stim.
Nice. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. And we can use a simple TENS unit. It's very affordable, just like the kits. So you get a ear clip and then you get the TENS unit offline and you pair these things together. Very easy.
Pretty much every single one of my patients gets a TENS or vagus nerve stim.
Yeah, absolutely. It's wonderful. When people can pair these things and really hone in on like what is going to make them more grateful? What does their routine look like? What little things can we adapt and change? They become successful. And then you get out of this, you know, 3PD, we didn't actually bring up today, but 3PD is a perceptual postural dizziness. So you're just constantly feeling their symptoms are a rocking sensation. And so they can't suppress the sensory information. And so getting those things to just work better and off back on track will become the success that they need.
Cool. Well, awesome, Dr. Ashley. This has been great. You're a wealth of knowledge. And I think the vestibular stuff, I think, again, you know, you guys have a great kit and a great message. And I think there's this wave of vestibular issues, even with you know, COVID, whether it's the from COVID phenomena or it's just the awareness of it with, you know, this long COVID conversation and things. But it's such an incredible need. And it is one of these things that, again, it's like, there's not a patented pharmaceutical for it. So you're not going to get a lot of like, I don't know, it's complex. It takes an hour to talk to people. It takes an hour to follow up with people. It's not as easy as pop a pill and like your symptoms are going to go away. So it just is, it requires a lot of work, but you're putting that work in and giving people those resources. So just however we could connect people to your work and to your kits, I think you guys are doing a great job. And I think this, just even this hour of conversation has been great just for the people that listen. And I think it's going to be really valuable for, you know, people out there suffering and dealing with these things. So do you have anything else to say in closing, Dr. Ashley Contreras, Doctor of Physical Therapy, Vestibular Rehab Specialist, anything else to say?
In closing, vestibular rehab is helpful for almost everyone. All vestibular rehab specialists are not equal. So make sure that you're finding the person that is really out there to help you. There's so many courses now. So if you take one course, you can say that you're a vestibular therapist. There is no certification to the knowledge. So you can ask, a good question to ask is, what percentage of your clients, of your clinic, is vestibular rehab? Because if it's that high percentage and they're seeing this, they're going to be more invested in understanding this and really getting to those root causes, and being able to help guide you to people like Dr. Crick. So also, if you're healthy, you're doing all these things, and you've done vestibular rehab, and you still feel like you have not, you know, gotten where you want to be, then you have to dig deeper. You have to explore. I'm a big fan of getting all tests run. And so if you haven't had vestibular testing to really see if the inner ear is functioning on both sides, or where does that disconnect happen, get to that root cause, find more answers, you can get better.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much. I've appreciated this. And keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.